song. And this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Coming up, Faith Perlow answers another question quite capably on Ask a Teacher. Gregory Stockel has a story about an avatar rock band. And we close the show with an American story. But now, here's Brian Lynn.
India is planning to launch the world's largest renewable energy project near the country's border with Pakistan. The term renewable describes energy produced from natural sources, such as sunlight or wind. These sources are considered renewable because they are continually produced in nature. The Indian effort would be so huge it could be seen from space. Officials say it will use solar and wind equipment to produce electricity. The project is named the Kavda Renewable Energy Park, after the closest village in the area. Reporters from the Associated Press recently visited the project area. They reported that thousands of workers are taking part in building activities. Some workers placed pillars in the ground to hold panels to capture sunlight. The large pillars can be seen rising into the distance for as far as the eye can see. Other workers prepared parts of the ground to support large wind collectors called turbines. Others were seen transporting building materials or running wiring over many kilometers. When completed, the project will be about the size of Singapore, spreading over 726 square kilometers. The Indian government estimates it will cost at least $2.26 billion. Leaders meeting at the COP28 climate conference in Dubai have said an expansion of renewable energy will be important as the world seeks to meet future environmental targets. Some leaders have said any final climate agreement must call for a tripling of renewable energy worldwide. In addition, environmental activists say major cuts must be made in the use of non-sustainable planet-warming energies, such as coal, oil, and natural gas. The Kavda project is being built in the middle of the Ran of Kutch in India's western Gujarat state. The Ran is an extreme environment containing a salt desert and wetlands. When AP reporters visited, 2 days of unseasonal heavy rains had left the ground muddy and wet. The only escape for water in the area is through evaporation. The rainy conditions made the jobs harder for the workers, the AP reported. An estimated 4,000 workers and 500 engineers have been living in camps over the past year to try to get the project up and running. Once completed, it will supply 30 gigawatts of renewable energy each year. This would be enough to power nearly 18 million Indian homes. India is mostly powered by carbon fuels, especially coal. Coal produces about 70% of the nation's electricity. Renewable energy currently makes up just 10% of India's electricity needs. The country is currently the third largest polluter of planet-warming gases, behind China and the United States. KSRK Verma is the project leader for Adani Green Energy Limited. The Indian government has contracted with the company to build 20 gigawatts of the project. Verma has 35 years of experience in the industry. He called the Kavda project one of the most difficult he has ever led. "It's not at all an easy site to work at," he said. He noted the area's severe conditions, including high winds, heavy rains, and earthquake activity. I'm Brian Lynn.
Recently, members of the American rock band Kiss closed out their final performance. The group's The End of the Road concert series ended in New York City's famous Madison Square Garden. But as it turns out, fans will still be able to enjoy Kiss performances for years to come. The band formed in 1973. It is currently made up of founders Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, as well as Tommy Thayer and Eric Singer. Towards the end of Saturday's show, the band members left the stage and revealed computerized likenesses of themselves. The computerized avatars launched into a performance of the song "God Gave Rock and Roll to You." After 50 years of Kiss, the band now hopes to be remembered forever. The avatars were created by George Lucas's special effects company, Industrial Light and Magic. The company also worked with Pop House Entertainment Group. Bjorn Ylvaeus, a member of the Swedish musical group ABBA, is its founder. The two companies recently came together for the ABBA Voyage show in London. Fans there could enjoy a full concert by the Swedish band as performed by the computerized avatars. Per Sundin is chief executive officer of Pop House Entertainment. He said the new technology lets Kiss continue its history for eternity. He said the band was not on stage during the computerized performance. He added, "Kiss could have a concert in three cities in the same night across three different continents. That's what you could do with this." In order to create their computerized avatars, Kiss performed an equipment that followed their movement. This equipment is called motion capture suits. Experimentation with this kind of technology has become increasingly common in the music industry. In October, K-pop star Mark Twain partnered with Soul Machines to create a computerized version of himself called Digital Mark. The technology lets fans have one-on-one talks with Digital Mark. Tuan is the first famous person to attach their likeness to OpenAI's GPT, artificial intelligence technology. aespa is a K-pop girl group. The group often performs alongside their computerized avatars. In fact, the four-member band is meant to be seen as a group of eight. Another girl group, Eternity, is made up entirely of computerized performers. No humans are necessary. KISS performer Paul Stanley told reporters that what they have done has been amazing, but it's not enough. The band deserves to live on because the band is bigger than we are. We can be forever young and forever iconic by taking us to places we've never dreamed of before, KISS performer Gene Simmons added. The technology is going to make Paul jump higher than he's ever done before. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Hi there. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question about the difference between the words ability and capability. Hello, VOA, Ask a Teacher. I am Leela from China. I am confused about ability and capability. I looked them up in the dictionary, but I still can't tell them apart. Can you explain the difference? Thanks, and best regards, Leela. Thanks for your question, Leela. The words are so similar that their use can even trouble native English speakers. Generally, ability describes special skills and qualities now in use. Capability speaks more to the possible power or use of those skills and qualities. Let's take a closer look at each. Ability is a noun that comes from the adjective able. If you are able, you can do something. You can carry out an action. Ability means a quality, skill, or aptitude that you have that makes it possible for you to do something. Compare these sentences. I have the ability to speak Russian and English. Courtney's disabilities are the result of a car accident. Henry's cooking abilities increased over years of practice in his own home. Let's move on to capability. Capability is the quality or state of being capable. To be capable means having qualities or skills to successfully perform some future action. Your capability depends more on the situation, environment, or your desire to do something, rather than just your ability to do it. He has the capability of lifting very heavy weights, but he injured himself last year, so he chooses to lift light weights while he recovers. Capability can also mean a skill set that can be further developed. The new employees have strong capabilities in marketing. They just need more experience in the business world. Finally, capability is the possibility to be affected by use or treatment. The movie Oppenheimer is about the development of the United States' nuclear capabilities and eventual use of those weapons. Critics question the administration's capability to compromise on a solution. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Leela. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Our story today is called The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton. Here is Larry West with the story.
Mr. Minden returned home for lunch. His wife, Millicent, was not at home. The servants did not know where she was. Mr. Minden sat alone at the table in the garden. He ate a small piece of meat and drank some mineral water. Mr. Minden always ate simple meals because he had problems with his stomach. Why, then, did he keep a cook among his servants? Because his wife, Millicent, liked to invite her friends to big dinners and serve them rare and expensive food and wine. Mr. Minden did not enjoy his wife's parties. Millicent complained that he did not know how to enjoy life. She did a lot of things that he did not like. Millicent wasted Mr. Minden's money and was unpleasant to him. But he never got angry with his wife. After eating, Mr. Minden took a walk through his house. He did not stay long in the living room. It reminded him of all the hours he had spent there at his wife's parties. The sight of the formal dining room made him feel even more uncomfortable. He remembered the long dinners where he had to talk to his wife's friends for hours. They never seemed very interested in what he was saying. Mr. Minden walked quickly past the ballroom where his wife danced with her friends. He would go to bed after dinner, but he could hear the orchestra playing until 3 in the morning. Mr. Minden walked into the library. No one in the house ever read any of the books, but Mr. Minden was proud to be rich enough to have a perfectly useless room in his house. He went into the sunny little room where his wife planned her busy days and evenings. Her writing table was covered with notes and cards from all her friends. Her waste paper basket was full of empty envelopes that had carried invitations to lunches, dinners, and theater parties. Mr. Minden saw a letter crushed into a small ball on the floor. He bent to pick it up. Just as he was about to throw it into the waste paper basket, he noticed that the letter was signed by his business partner, Thomas Antrim. But Antrim's letter to Mr. Minden's wife was not about business. As Mr. Minden read it, he felt as if his mind was spinning out of control. He sat down heavily in the chair near his wife's little writing table. Now the room looked cold and unfamiliar. "Who are you?" the walls seemed to say. "Who am I?" Mr. Minden said in a loud voice. "I'll tell you who I am. I am the man who paid for every piece of furniture in this room. If it were not for me and my money, this room would be empty." Suddenly, Mr. Minden felt taller. He marched across his wife's room. It belonged to him, didn't it? The house belonged to him, too. He felt powerful. He sat at the table and wrote a letter to Millicent. One of the servants came into the room. "Did you call, sir?" he asked. "No," Mr. Minden replied. "But since you are here, please telephone for a taxi cab at once." The taxi took him to a hotel near his bank. A clerk showed him to his room. It smelled of cheap soap. The window in the room was open, and hot noises came up from the street. Mr. Minden looked at his watch. 4 o'clock. He wondered if Millicent had come home yet and read his letter. His head began to ache, and Mr. Minden lay down on the bed. When he woke up, it was dark. He looked at his watch. 8 o'clock. Millicent must be dressing for dinner. They were supposed to go to Mrs. Targe's house for dinner tonight. Well, Mr. Minden thought, Millicent would have to go alone. Maybe she would ask Thomas Antrim to take her to the party. Mr. Minden realized he was hungry. He left his room and walked down the stairs to the hotel dining room. The air, smelling of coffee and fried food, wrapped itself around his head. Mr. Minden could not eat much of the food that the hotel waiter brought him. He went back to his room, feeling sick. He also felt hot and dirty in the clothing he had worn all day. He had never realized how much he loved his home. Someone knocked at his door. Mr. Minden jumped to his feet. "Minden?" a voice asked. "Are you there?" Mr. Minden recognized that voice. It belonged to Lawrence Macy. 30 years ago, Macy had been very popular with women, especially with other men's wives. As a young man, he had interfered in many marriages. Now, in his old age, Lawrence Macy had become a kind of marriage doctor. He helped husbands and wives save their marriages. Mr. Minden began to feel better as soon as Lawrence Macy walked into his hotel room. 2 men followed him. One was Mr. Minden's rich uncle, Ezra Brownrigg. The other was the Reverend Dr. Boniphant, the minister of St. Luke's Church, where Mr. Minden and his family prayed every Sunday. Mr. Minden looked at the 3 men and felt very proud that they had come to help him. For the first time in his married life, Mr. Minden felt as important as his wife Millicent. Lawrence Macy sat on the edge of the bed and lit a cigarette. "Mrs. Minden sent for me," he said. Mr. Minden could not help feeling proud of Millicent. She had done the right thing. Macy continued. "She showed me your letter. She asks you for mercy." Macy paused and then said, "The poor woman is very unhappy, and we have come here to ask you what you plan to do." Now, Mr. Minden began to feel uncomfortable. "To do?" he asked. "To do? Well, I plan to leave her." Macy stopped smoking his cigarette. "Do you want to divorce her?" he asked. "Why, yes, Mr. Minden replied. Macy knocked the ashes from his cigarette. "Are you absolutely sure that you want to do this?" he asked. Mr. Minden nodded his head. "I plan to divorce her," he said loudly. Mr. Minden began to feel very excited. It was the first time he had ever had so many people sitting and listening to him. He told his audience everything, beginning with his discovery of his wife's love affair with his business partner, and ending with his complaints about her expensive dinner parties. His uncle looked at his watch. Dr. Bonifant began to stare out of the hotel window. Macy stood up. "Do you plan to dishonor yourself, then?" he asked. "No one knows what has happened. You are the only one who can reveal the secret. You will make yourself look foolish." Mr. Minden tried to rise, but he fell back weakly. The three men picked up their hats. In another moment, they would be gone. When they left, Mr. Minden would lose his audience and his belief in himself and his decision. "I won't leave for New York until tomorrow," he whispered. Lawrence Macy smiled. "Tomorrow will be too late," he said. "Tomorrow, everyone will know you are here." Macy opened the hotel room door. Mr. Brownrigg and Dr. Bonifant walked out of the room. Macy turned to follow them when he felt Mr. Minden's hand grab his arm. "I will come with you," Mr. Minden sighed. It's for the children." Lawrence Macy nodded as Mr. Minden walked out of the room. He closed the door gently.
Have just heard the story, The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton. Your storyteller was Larry West. This is Shep O'Neill.
All the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.